Hello, it's Tuesday 15th of June. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson. On this week's show, Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia and I are asking, are travel reopenings in Southeast Asia only about inbound tourism? So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today, with all eyes on Phuket and Bali, we're going to take a look at whether countries in Southeast Asia are prioritizing inbound travel over everything else to rebuild their visitor economies. And if so, where does this leave domestic and outbound in the equation both now and in future? So Hannah, firstly, I guess we should probably look at those two high profile July reopenings that everybody is talking about right now, beginning with Phuket. And I guess it's hard not to conclude from all the details that are coming out right now that inbound travel is the priority for Thailand over the coming months.
It really seems that way, doesn't it? You know, the amount of focus in the media right now, especially news headlines out from Thailand, everything is focusing on this Phuket sandbox plan. And we've got everybody coming out saying that the 1 July reopening is going to happen. You know, we've had the TAT keep saying it, the tourism minister keeps saying it, even the prime minister over the weekend was saying that too. We're 15th of June today, so we're 15 days out. But it's still got a lot of hurdles to clear still. You know, it's had cabinet approval. Now it needs to go back to the CCSA, which is a task force's approval. It needs to go back to cabinet, and then it needs to get written into the Royal Gazette for it to kind of come true. And if I were an inbound tourist, actually, and I'm 15th of June and I'm looking at all of that, you know, I think I would be quite reluctant to book anything for the 1st of July, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of feel that Thailand knows this too. I mean, we both watched a webinar last week, which was hosted by the Foreign Correspondents Club of Thailand, and it had the Phuket Hotels Association, the Tourism, Authority of Thailand, the Association of Thai Travel Agents. There's a whole bunch of high-level executives, and it was a good discussion. But, you know, that whole focus really was that although July 1 is going to be the start date, this is really looking a little bit further ahead to try and get the protocols in place, just get something started and try and encourage people to come back. I think they said that even by December to March, which is generally the high season for Phuket, for Thailand, generally because you get a lot of Europeans come during the European winter, that Phuket would only be looking at around about 30 to 40%. Hotel occupancy during that period, which is pretty low. So it's going to have to build up over the next months to that figure, and then maybe the next year it starts to grow again. The Tourism Authority of Thailand tweeted last night that it updated its website with the latest protocols. It's a whole long page of protocols and things that tourists will have to do if they want to visit Phuket once the sandbox opens. But they did say also that the final official details are still under review. And as you said there, the Royal Gazette publication is probably not going to be until the last week of June, which means that you probably wouldn't book a holiday right now. I guess the reason that they're delaying it as much as they can is just to increase the number of vaccinations of local residents, get that figure right up. But generally, I think it's now being accepted that although July 1 is the start date, things aren't really going to kick off properly until later in the year.
Yeah, I mean, especially with this kind of modification. So the original proposal was that travellers to Phuket would only need to stay on the island for 7 days and then they would be able to travel around Thailand. But that's been since increased to 14 days, which I think even the tourism minister has said that they've had to kind of revise down their arrivals numbers for July by about 50%. But they also kind of hinted that this 14 days is not anticipated to last, I think, for the whole of Q3, that they are going to look at it maybe by August. It could be reduced. They've even had plans to perhaps team up with Koh Samui, so you could spend 7 days on Phuket, then transfer to Koh Samui with Bangkok Airways for the last 7 days, and then you're free to kind of travel on. Yeah, it does seem that I think the tourism authorities are pushing for it, but they're also trying to keep everybody's expectations realistic, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think one of the interesting, and we'll come on to the domestic and the outbound aspects of tourism in a moment, but if you take Thailand in Indonesia specifically, you mentioned there's updates, there's incremental changes to protocols almost daily. this has been happening for months and months. So if you look at Indonesia, for example, you know, they tried to reopen Bali last September. September the 11th was the initial hard opening date. Thailand introduced its special tourist visa, I think it was in October last year. So the planning to reopen for both destinations is a year, I would guess. So Cambodia at the moment is, we'll come on to Cambodia in a minute, but Cambodia is now talking of opening in the fourth quarter. Other countries at the moment aren't really talking at all. It really shows you the level of planning and detail that has to go into these, and countries that haven't even announced that they're going to reopen yet, you just wonder, how quickly can they do it? Can they learn from the mistakes and the successes of Thailand and Indonesia? But even so, there are individual circumstances, aren't there, in each country which have to be taken into account.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do get the impression that I think a lot of countries in Southeast Asia are holding back and just waiting to see what happens with these two. I mean, I think a lot of the region were waiting for this Singapore, Hong Kong air travel bubble, and we'll talk about that too. But, you know, with that keeps being postponed, it keep being kicked down the road. Now, I think all eyes are on Thailand, and everybody is going to be very keen to learn from their mistakes for sure. And I think one destination that's really got its eye on Thailand is Indonesia. So we were just talking just now then about the, it's got loads of different names, the TCA, the Travel Corridor Arrangement, they call it the three Bs, Bali, Bintan, and Batam. But essentially reopening these destinations to international travelers. But, you know, in comparison to Thailand, details are pretty thin on the ground, I'd say, about this Bali proposal. So we get a lot of press still, I think, in the Indonesian media about, yes, it's going to happen. Bali governor says it's going to happen. Tourism minister says it's going to happen. But the exact start date, no, they haven't. They say maybe July, Q3. It's not like a Thailand 1 July. They've been pretty cagey about, you know, are you only going to be able to stay in certain hotels? We started to see a little bit more news about quarantine, and it seems like there is going to be a quarantine even for vaccinated travelers. So it was reported over the weekend that vaccinated travelers to Bali would have to undergo a 5-day kind of hotel quarantine. So they'd be able to use the hotel facilities, but they would have to stay within the hotel. Whereas non-vaccinated travelers to Bali would be welcome, which is kind of surprising because this whole time we've only heard about vaccinated travelers. But non-vaccinated travelers would have to spend 5 days in the hotel room self-isolating before they're allowed out. So, you know, the question mark for me really is, when are they going to finalize things? When are they actually going to announce a start date and really outline what these protocols are? Because it's pretty confusing, I think, right now for Bali.
Yeah, I agree. And it has to be communicated to the travel industry and to consumers themselves. One thing I would say about the Tourism Authority of Thailand is they have published in pretty much detail the Phuket sandbox terms and conditions, what's required pre-arrival, when you arrive. You know, there is full detail there. I mean, okay, it has been changed quite a lot and it is subject to further changes in future, but the terms are quite set out. So anybody who's thinking or interested traveling to Phuket probably later in the year has a pretty much a clear idea of what's going to be required from them and what their holiday might look like. But you're right, in Indonesia at the moment, we don't have any of that detail. And I think it was a bit of a surprise that they threw in over the weekend that it won't just be vaccinated. It could be non-vaccinated travelers as well, that maybe international travelers that may be accepted into the mix. That's an interesting aspect, not just for booking and booking confidence, but also the roll-on implications for domestic travelers, where they would be comfortable visiting Bali with non-vaccinated foreign travelers, but also the insurance requirements, I would have thought, might be slightly different. Phuket has said that all travelers must be vaccinated and they must have a minimum travel insurance with medical cover of up to $100,000. Indonesia hasn't said that yet, but it is pretty clear on the Phuket side that everybody has to be vaccinated, and therefore insurers themselves have a bit of a clearer picture. But if Bali is readmitting vaccinated and non-vaccinated travelers, what are the implications for insurance?
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point. For us, you know, it's really interesting. You've just got these two kind of different approaches, both gunning for a July reopening. And as you were saying, Gary, when you introduced the topic, really seems like a lot of press, a lot of focus, a lot of attention is on inbound right now, rather than necessarily what is going on domestically for either of these two.
Yeah, and that segues really neatly into the point I was going to make, because if you look at both countries and how they're approaching their markets, everybody is talking about the countries they want to negotiate with and to bring travelers in from. Thailand has said that it is looking at vaccinated travelers from low to medium risk countries. And to manage that, they use what is called the Global COVID Recovery Index, which is updated every 15 days. They've been pretty upfront about that's what they're using. Indonesia, less so. It's been talking about some of the countries that would like to do deals with. Some of those are in Europe, some of those are in the Middle East. But the interesting thing, I think, Hannah, is when we look at inbound tourism in Southeast Asia before the pandemic, I think it was about a third of travelers into ASEAN countries were from other ASEAN countries. At the moment, neither Thailand nor Indonesia is looking at other ASEAN countries for inbound travel. It's probably struggling a little bit for the rest of Asia Pacific. But as you said there, if they're not looking at inbound travelers from ASEAN, then there's certainly not many outbound travelers into other ASEAN countries. So outbound at the moment looks in the region in a situation of going nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, let's have a look at Cambodia now and what's going on there in terms of inbound travel. So Cambodia has suddenly kind of perked up. They were very quiet, I think, about their inbound travel plans for quite some time. But about a month or so ago, the Ministry of Tourism started upping its game and talking about letting in vaccinated travellers from Q4. But these seem to be very much vaccinated travellers from what I've read. It seems to be travellers under tour packages, so more groups, definitely not FIT. And it seems like they're having lots of consultative meetings with the private sector as well, which is good because, you know, as we've seen in Thailand, I think you really need a private sector that is really going to campaign and support for this reopening as too. You really need that level of buy-in for reopening. But it will be interesting, won't it, to see how they fare. I mean, of course, Cambodia right now still have this $2,000 deposit on arrival. You have to pay in cash. They made a lot of splash about that last year. I mean, whether travelers will even remember now, you know, every day just blurs into another in lockdown, I think. But, you know, originally they had $3,000 and they were even itemizing costs, I think, for your funeral. So whether they are still going to go to that level, it will be interesting to see. You know, and they're one of the few countries who also charge a visa fee. Cambodia, are they going to waive that? Is that something that they're going to do? That's something certainly that the private sector are pushing for. I think it's about $30. Is that really a big deterrent? I mean, you're probably talking about a pretty high value package cost anyhow. So maybe the visa fee is not such a big deal as the private sector perhaps believes it to be.
Yeah, I guess if it's going to be packaged tourists, I guess, as you say, that probably would be built into the package price. Reverting back to Thailand, Thailand has said that you would need a valid visa to enter the Phuket sandbox, and you'd also need a certificate of entry, which is issued by the Royal Thai Embassy or consulate in your own country. So, you know, the actual procedure of applying to visit a country is ratcheted up. I'm not sure whether that certificate of entry could be issued through a travel agent or a tour operator, whether you'd actually have to do that in person. That's not clear at the moment. But as you say there, with Cambodia, they have specifically said at the moment they're looking at tour package travellers, which to me suggests that they're looking at specific markets rather than opening up more broadly to vaccinated travellers from around the world. I'm not sure what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think their big hope is still obviously China. China accounts for such a high percentage of their inbound travellers, not necessarily the inbound spend, but in terms of volume, yes, it has the volume. And, you know, it's risky. We've talked about this so many times on the podcast now about China not looking like it's going to reopen anytime soon. So if a country is pinning its hopes on that, I would perhaps advise them to look at other source markets, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? That over, if we were looking back a year ago, and you said this a few times, is, you know, China was seen as the recovery market that everybody was looking for, everybody was hoping would come back soon. It's not in play at the moment. We don't know when China will encourage its citizens to travel overseas again and to which destinations it would encourage them to go to. You'd imagine that Cambodian, probably Laos would be high priority, particularly as they're opening the railway with Laos supposedly at the end of this year, although there are rumours that might be pushed into Q1 of next year. But, you know, if they do open up to tour package travellers, Cambodia or Laos would, you know, would China require that to be exclusively from China? Would they, in initial period, permit Chinese travelers to be mixing with other nationalities? It's unknown. We really don't know the answer to that at the moment. But it does look very much that Cambodia and Laos, the future structure and shape of tourism economies in those countries will be heavily reliant on China. So you would imagine that to kickstart and to get that process in place, China would probably be involved.
Yeah, you think that. I mean, in Cambodia and Laos as well are also pretty interesting because they're very much reliant on kind of feeder countries to even arrive into the country. So whether Cambodia opens up is also kind of contingent whether Thailand opens up, because obviously a lot of flight connections are via places like Thailand. They're via Vietnam, via Singapore. So they perhaps need to negotiate more direct flights, which airlines, you know, at this point, I think even airlines who have not considered doing direct flights before might jump at it just at the chance of having a plane full of people to be able to fly and some revenue from that. But it's definitely not quite as straightforward as countries like Thailand or like Singapore, who have all of those direct flights and the links with their airlines already.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we're talking about airlines, the latest figures from OAG released this week is that Southeast Asia overall, the capacity for its airlines is 65.8% down. So minus 65.8% compared to the week of the 20th of January 2020. So just before the pandemic. That's the highest rate of the 17 sub-regions worldwide. The next highest is Western Europe, which is minus 59.7%, and then Southern Africa, which is minus 50%. So minus 65.8%. It's really hard to understand how some of the airlines in this region are still operating.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move to another Southeast Asian country now. So the Philippines. And this is one that has started to talk about green lanes. I mean, the Philippines is a funny case because, you know, even domestically, their tourism has not fully reopened since last March 2020 when things closed down. But slowly, the Department of Tourism is starting to look at vaccinated travellers. There's been a little bit more talk about establishing a green lane. But they are kind of saying one of the major blockers for them right now is the fact that they don't have a system in place to verify vaccination certificates. And this is something I think we've banged on about again and again about, I don't know how they can be in this situation and not have figured out a system, but they're by far not the only ones to have done that. And I think one of the issues that they're facing is one of their bigger inbound markets is from America. And of course, in the US, you've got lots of different states issuing different types of vaccine certificates, sometimes paper, sometimes digital. And of course, if it's only a paper certificate, how do you verify that it's not a fake? So they are kind of in this conundrum, but they have made this step forward and they have changed their inbound policy, at least for Filipino travelers. So if you were vaccinated in the Philippines now, you only face a 7-day quarantine upon return, which they say is kind of the start of changing things. But they need to figure out how can they verify, you know, vaccination status of people who've been vaccinated overseas.
Incredibly confusing. You're right. I mean, reducing the quarantine for Filipino travelers does potentially open up the possibility that Filipinos can travel, but you still got to face a 7-day quarantine when you come back. But as you said, that's probably procedural, just to try and move the dial forward a little bit. Yeah, there were talks also this week, I think, between Philippines and Cambodia. Cambodia's imploring Philippines to create a travel corridor in future with Cambodia. I guess, like everything else at the moment, that's just in negotiation stage. And you know, you read these articles in the newspaper where well-meaning statements are made by politicians, and they almost get published as viable truth when there's so much behind the scenes that still needs to take place.
Yeah, I mean, I think one interesting kind of potential source market for the Philippines is Israel, actually. And Philippine Airlines have said that they are looking at reopening, in fact, direct flights between Tel Aviv and Manila. And, you know, the Philippines is also quite a key source market for Israel, you know, for pilgrimage tours. So that could be something to keep an eye out, actually, Israelis into the Philippines.
So before we move on to domestic and outbound, let's have a quick look at Vietnam and what's happening there. I guess the major story at the moment is that they cancelled the Southeast, or they're proposing to cancel the Southeast Asian Games, which will be hosted later this year. That could be taken as two ways, I suppose, is that maybe it shows that they're not willing to permit inbound travelers at all this year, or you could say that they're actually moving Southeast Asian Games out of the way so that they could actually reopen without the problem that the Southeast Asian Games itself would bring, as Tokyo is finding out right now with the Olympics. But they're also looking at vaccinated passports in terms of Pukwok, aren't they? That has sort of emerged in the last week or so as something that could happen in a kind of Phuket-type, Bali-type scenario.
Yeah, they've talked about that. They haven't really put much flesh on the bones either in terms of, you know, timelines or whether this is really going to happen. But it is something that's been surfacing in the news every few weeks or so. It's interesting, isn't it, this postponement of the SEA Games? I mean, for me, I think I'm more on the pessimistic side. They were meant to take place late November, early December. And the fact that Vietnam think right now, we're only in June, 6 months out, they still can't happen because of the virus. I don't know. For me, that's not particularly optimistic about Vietnam's chances of reopening its borders anytime soon.
So that's kind of a little sweep around inbound. Inbound travel at the moment definitely is the focus for governments that are trying to revitalize their visitor economies, which, as we know, over the past 16, 17 months have taken such a huge hit. But during that period, domestic tourism has been the lifeline, hasn't it? It's what we've all been talking about because airlines and hotels and travel players themselves have been trying to encourage domestic travelers to travel more, to spend more, to keep the economies afloat. But at the moment, it seems to be drifting a little bit into the distance as inbound becomes the priority. So where should we start in terms of what's happening with domestic, Hannah?
Well, let's start with the Philippines again. It's always one I think that's always overlooked. But like I was saying earlier, you know, for the Philippines, domestic tourism has been something that the government has really struggled to get going. And this is a lot down to local governments. Each have their own restrictions. They each have their own quarantine policies for other domestic travellers. They have their own testing regulations. And of course, they've got very high number of cases. So just before Easter, the Philippines saw Metro Manila and the surrounding provinces, they call NCR Plus, brought back down to the strictest level of lockdown. So they weren't allowed to embark on any domestic travel. And of course, this right before Easter completely skewered the domestic tourism industry. And it meant everybody nationwide suffered because, of course, they're one of the key markets. But we have now, I think, from the beginning of June, these NCR Plus travelers were finally allowed to visit other provinces. And we have seen domestic numbers start to pick up again. So Boracay, in that first weekend even that they were available, we saw over 2,000 travellers, majority from Metro Manila, visiting the island. And I think in May, it had about 2,000, perhaps less than that, the whole month. So everybody hitting Boracay. Baguio, again, another really popular destination, numbers up to about 1,400 in the first week. So things are kind of picking up. But, you know, cases are picking up again. So it's tough. And I think one of the biggest issues that the Philippines faces is just this kind of unequal recovery of cases within the country itself. And then just all of these different testing requirements, different apps you've got to download. It's just really complicated.
Yeah, I would agree. It's nice to start with the Philippines. The three, I guess, markets that have had the strongest domestic tourism sectors over recent months have been Vietnam, Thailand, and Indonesia. We'll come to those in a moment. Malaysia, where we're based, absolutely nothing is happening. We enter another 2 weeks of national lockdown. Domestic tourism of any kind hasn't really been permitted since the middle of January. So we're moving towards 5 months of that now. Doesn't look like anything's going to happen. Numbers, daily infection numbers are starting to come down. Vaccination rates holding at around 130,000 vaccinations per day, which is pretty good, but it's not going to make huge inroads yet. It's going to take time. So domestic tourism here is not looking too bright, is it?
No, it really isn't. You know, the industry has had pretty much zero revenue, like you said, for going on about 5 months now. We're going to see more closures for sure. And government has given some financial aid measures, but these are nowhere near enough to be able to support the industry.
I would agree. There's probably not much more we can say about that. So let's look at Vietnam. Vietnam's had a strong domestic travel sector, but obviously the recent wave has really impacted that. It's impacted people's ability to travel. It's impacted the airlines. I think Vietnam has actually fallen out of the top 20 nations worldwide for weekly capacity. It was up in the top five at one point, but it's fallen to 21st this week. And that reflects the fact that there have been stricter restrictions. Some domestic locations are starting to reopen, but there is, I guess, inevitable caution at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's unfortunate this time that now a lot of the cases seem to be centered around Ho Chi Minh City. And, you know, of course, we've seen once these cases are in big cities, it's a lot harder to control. It's a lot harder to stamp it out. And we've seen before, Vietnam has always been very successful at bringing cases back down to pretty much zero after every wave. But this wave is really its longest wave, its hardest hitting wave. It doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. But in a way, at least it has the advantage in that it has this kind of dual center, right? You have Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh, which are both key source markets. So yes, Ho Chi Minh City is under social distancing. It's been extended another 2 weeks now. But at least other markets have still got Hanoi. So we've seen, like you said, other destinations are reopening. Trang Ninh province with Halong Bay. We've seen Da Nang reopen its beaches too. So the hope is that at least they can capture some domestic market. But, you know, until cases are back down, things are not going to start recovering.
Yeah, similar case in Indonesia as well, that the post-Eid rise in infections is now starting to look quite worrying around Jakarta. The infection rate is continuing to increase around there. And Jakarta obviously is the primary domestic travel source market around the country. Indonesia is still pushing this work from Bali scheme. It's trying to extend that beyond Nusa Dua so that civil servants spend time working in Bali, and they can also use some of the leisure time to help revive Bali's tourism economy. But, you know, that really, I guess, is sort of scratching at the surface a little bit. Thailand, we still have different restrictions in Thailand, don't we? There's this focus on international travel, and there have been domestic stimulus packages. But at the moment, with this focus so much on Phuket and possibly Samui, maybe some of the other islands, and perhaps Chiang Mai as well, you know, it's kind of hard to see how they can focus on domestic tourism promotion at the moment when, you know, their attentions are solely focused on getting inbound back up and running.
Yeah, and I think that Thai travellers are also pretty hesitant. You know, if you compare them to Indonesian travellers, we've seen Indonesian travellers will travel. They've even been travelling outbound. Thai travellers are a different kettle of fish, as they say. I think they were a lot more cautious, and these high case numbers that are still around definitely is denting traveler confidence. So even if they can travel to another province, I think they are choosing to stay at home, which of course is damaging the industry.
Yeah, and also watching and waiting to see what happens with the vaccine rollout, which got off to a really good start, but has run into a bit of controversy and a bit of a dead end in recent days. That also has knock-on implications for other countries in the region, because the AstraZeneca vaccines that are being produced in Thailand, many of them were ring-fenced for export to countries like Malaysia. So we're not quite sure about how those supply vaccines will roll out in the coming months. Hopefully these delays can be circumvented, but at the moment it's not looking too great.
So that's what's been going on kind of domestically. So it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I think some countries are doing better, countries like Indonesia. Some countries like Malaysia is dead in the water. But like you say, there is this feeling, at least in the press, and I think that also drives a lot of public perception, that the focus is very much on getting people in rather than revitalizing what you've currently got. And for me, you know, this is, I think, really the wrong strategy right now. Yes, I think we have to open inbound tourism eventually, and we have to do it in a safe way. But domestic travel is still all most of these countries have got. That's the only thing that is propping up the tourism industry. And if governments are not spending the time now thinking, how else can we revitalize this? How else can we stimulate demand? Looking at sectors that have been overlooked, perhaps, then it's very difficult to see how, once international tourism does reopen, that some of these tourism businesses are still even going to be in existence.
Totally agree with that. It's where are we now? Middle of June. There's no progress in some countries at all, and tourism businesses, those that are hanging on, I mean, we know that, particularly here in Malaysia, so many businesses are simply not operating at the moment. They've closed their doors, and they're hoping that they will be able to reopen their businesses later this year, early next year. But at the moment, they're simply inactive, and many of these inactive businesses will eventually just close down. Another problem we have is the knock-on industries, you know, the restaurant sector, F&B, retail. You know, it's really hurting. And so when you do reopen, even to domestic tour, the hotel sector as well is really hurting in Malaysia. So when restrictions are lifted, you know, what are people going to find again? If you go to Langkawi, you go to Phuket, what's closed down? You know, what opportunities that you used to enjoy as a tourist just won't be available to you anymore.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that the Phuket Hotels Association raised on this webinar you were talking about, Gary, last week, wasn't it? Just that this concern as well that, yes, Phuket is going to open on 1 July, but, you know, what happens when the customers come out of the hotel and look down the street and see all of these closed businesses? What kind of impression is that going to give to other travellers internationally, you know, if it's posted on social media and things? So, yeah, I think government has got to think big picture.
A good example, I think, is Langkawi in Malaysia, which I've mentioned this before, but Christmas and New Year was thriving. It was domestic tourists only. It was as busy as I've ever seen it. I go to Langkawi quite regularly. It was as busy as I've ever seen it. There was a lot of innovation. Hotels and F&B outlets and all tour operators were doing new products. They were really trying to cater to the market, and it was really successfully working. And that really would help drive redevelopment of the industry. But at the moment, if you're now just going to focus on building back from scratch on inbound travelers, I think, you know, that social media aspect, that sharing of visuals and videos of what people are seeing when they're visiting a destination for the first time in 1.5 years, 2 years, whatever, you know, that it has huge impact on potential future visitors, arrivals, and the industry itself. And I'm not quite sure governments quite understand that right now.
No. So outbound then, what's been happening outbound travel?
Not much is there. I mean, we're looking at last week, Singapore and Australia were talking. There were meetings between the two prime ministers about potentially setting up a travel bubble between the two countries. They did also say that this is not going to happen anytime soon, primarily, I think, because of the different vaccine rollouts between the two countries. I think they want to get Australia's vaccine rate right up. It is moving. It's going. It's making progress. But obviously, they have a much bigger, more dispersed population to manage than Singapore does. But they were looking, quite interestingly, at student travel, rebooting education travel into Australia, because Australia has so many international students in a normal year. A lot of those come from and via Singapore. So it was seen as a route back to revitalizing the education economy in Australia, which is interesting. I think that's a really interesting angle. Australia have been pushing this. We spoke to Simon Westaway a couple of months ago, and he said this as well, that, you know, the education economy doesn't just revolve, it's not just tourism, it really impacts the whole national economy. So that's something that I guess that they're looking to reboot. But then on the other side, Hannah, the Hajj has been cancelled from Indonesia, and that will have a big impact.
Yeah, I mean, this is hundreds and thousands of pilgrims that normally travel on a yearly basis to Saudi Arabia for the Hajj. And Saudi Arabia announced just over the weekend that they were cancelling Hajj for international inbound travellers for the second year in a row. And so many small travel agents within Indonesia rely on this. You know, it's just a big blow. It was something that perhaps could have shown that outbound travel could work. Clearly, Saudi didn't want to take the risk. And, you know, we see its impact in Singapore, in Malaysia, in Brunei as well, where there are a large number of pilgrims traveling out for Hajj. So the one thing will be interesting to see after the Hajj period, so after mid-July, is whether they will open up for Umrah again and which countries they will allow in. So particularly Indonesia. I mean, last year, Indonesian pilgrims were traveling to Saudi Arabia for Umrah until Saudi Arabia put a stop on that because of the large number of infected Indonesians they were detecting. But that could be a lifeline. And for me, you know, I do think that Umrah travel is going to be one of the segments that picks up fairly fast for outbound travel. Will be one of the first outbound travel sectors to really go ahead, simply because it's a really controlled itinerary. The government really has a handle on who's going in. You know, Saudi Arabia has quite strict conditions now for entry. But it's two-sided. So Saudi has got to allow some countries in. Like right now, I think they allow Malaysia in, but not Indonesia. And the other way, so Malaysia's got to decide to allow pilgrims out to Saudi Arabia. So there's still work to go on that. But I think the will is there on both sides to make that work.
I would agree. And I guess the other element of outbound tourism at the moment that's thriving, I guess, is vaccine tours. You see a lot of those still being advertised in Thailand, Vietnam, to go to the US or to other countries. Dubai is one of those countries. to get a vaccine and take a holiday. It's kind of getting less media attention than it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it's still prevalent. It's not in any substantive numbers that's going to make much of a difference.
No, I mean, this tends to be the wealthy, because these tours aren't cheap. Not only have you got to be wealthy, but you've also got to have quite a amount of time as well to be able to take these holidays. So a lot of them are advertising vaccine tours to the US because they're using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is, of course, just a one dose. But then you've still got quarantines on the way back. So if you're from Vietnam, you've still got a 21-day quarantine facing you when you return. So this is not a kind of trip for those who are short on time or money.
No. And I guess just as we finish off, as we round out, one of the outbound trends that's starting to hold and which Southeast Asian countries really have to pay attention to is key markets circumventing Southeast Asia completely and going to Europe or to the US. Now, this is a particularly interesting case in South Korea, and we're going to talk about this more in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have a South Korea special edition of the show. But South Koreans at the moment are starting to look at package tours to Europe in particular for the summer, when ordinarily they may be traveling into Southeast Asian countries. This is a trend that Southeast Asian countries probably really want to monitor and look at very, very closely. The tour packages, the flight prices from Korea into European countries are quite cheap this summer. There are some good deals there. And again, they're looking at ways to make the re-entry quarantine much easier and that you can hopefully do it at home. So, you know, that's a key market for Southeast Asia that they don't want to lose for the long term.
Yeah, exactly. We did see in the press last week South Korea saying that they were in talks with Thailand, that they wanted to be in talks with Singapore as well about tour groups. But I think that this would be a two-way thing. And I just don't know at this point. I mean, Singapore has already said it's a little bit hesitant. It was saying maybe this is not the right time to do this. And for Thailand, of course, I'm sure they would jump at the chance of having South Korean groups. But I'm sure that South Korea's expectation would be that Thai travelers would also travel out to South Korea. And we have not seen much in terms of government policy about outbound travelers. You know, even with the Phuket sandbox, is that going to be applicable for Thai travelers who travel out? Could that be a way for them to kind of shortcut it so they could fly out from Bangkok to South Korea, say, fly back to Phuket, stay in Phuket for 14 days, but at least they're not in state quarantine. And then after that, fly onwards to Bangkok. I don't know. The government has not really stated much about what all of these kind of schemes mean. And I'm sure that outbound travel agents are dying to know about that right now.
Interesting market to watch. And stay tuned, because we are going to cover this in more details. And one of the really key elements of the South Korean market as well, which makes it even more interesting, is that the vaccination rate, after a very slow start, is really kicking on pretty fast. And South Koreans do clearly seem that they want to take a holiday, they want to travel, so it's definitely one to watch.
And I think we can just round up by saying, you know, what you were saying earlier a bit, Gary, just what's interesting, I think, with all of these, with inbound and outbound, is the lack of ASEAN to ASEAN kind of agreements. So I think it was at the end of last year, possibly, it might even been this year, that ASEAN was really talking about establishing this ASEAN travel corridor. I mean, that's amounted to nothing, hasn't it? And the only countries who are talking about wanting to open up to one another is Indonesia wants Singapore's travellers to visit Batam and Bintan. Other than that, maybe Thailand wants Singaporeans to visit Phuket. But all of these are very much one way. No one in ASEAN is really talking about a reciprocal leisure travel bubble. And like you said, ASEAN to ASEAN travel accounted for such a huge percentage of inbound travel before the pandemic. I don't know, it just seems crazy that some of the first markets to visit Thailand or to visit Indonesia could be, you know, from halfway across the world rather than, you know, next door neighbors.
Yeah, I guess we have to see how that rolls out. You know, at the moment, with the resurgent waves that we've had in the region, it is quite difficult to plan too far ahead. But, you know, that's what ASEAN should have been doing. It hasn't been doing. Let's just wrap up on this thing that we always talk about. Why there has been no ASEAN integration on vaccine passports, digital health certificates, is simply beyond me, because that really would have pushed the region much further forward than it actually is right now. So, Hannah, that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the show. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And don't forget to send us your thoughts on comments on what we discussed or anything that we missed out. Drop us an email at hello@seasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show, or on Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Podcast Addict, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each one. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, do give us a review. That helps other people find the show.
So that's a wrap for this week, although we've got a second show coming later in the week. More about that to come on our LinkedIn page. But we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism with you again very soon.